Everybody, my name is Mitch Milo. I'm a technical specialist in the South Central District, which is Dallas-Fort Worth and Oklahoma. So if you're in that area, you may see me around. Good to be here.
All right. Thanks, Mitch. All right. Well, thank you for joining us today. Thanks for, first of all, making the trip to Ignite, and thanks for joining for the session. Why don't you just kind of get a little, work the room just a little bit and get a sense of familiarity. So what's the level of familiarity in the room with Dynamics CRM? Okay, pretty good. Excellent. All right, how about familiarity with the field service solution? Okay, a little bit less, some familiarity. All right, who just got really lost at the end of building A and decided to sit down for a minute? All right, so we got a few of those there. You don't have to, we won't out you in front of the crowd. Okay, well good. Well, we're excited to talk a little bit about field service today. So we're gonna go fairly broad. We'll go through the solution pretty end to end, and we'll be able to see quite a bit of it. We've got some kind of new exciting things happening. We'll show you some of those things. There'll be more coming, more new information in a couple weeks at CRMUG. There's going to be a lot more details about Dynamics 365 and particularly what's going on with some of the solutions. So if you're there, you can take advantage of it firsthand or catch it online or just keep an eye on what's going on. So one of the, just a little bit of background on the field service solution. So one of the things as we look at customer engagement, which is our focus in the CRM division, one of the things that's very clear is that field service plays a very key role for a lot of businesses, a lot of industries, a lot of enterprises, various types of organizations as part of the entire customer journey. And so in the process of thinking about marketing and sales and service, which we always have in CRM, looking at adding on the field service capability was a key addition and key responsiveness really to our customers. Because they're very interested in that solution, a lot of interest there. And so a little over a year ago, you probably know the background, we had the opportunity of acquiring an awesome company called Field One, who had built a very emerging, very kind of leading edge Field One offering on CRM. And since then, we have brought it in as a full member of the family. We've beefed up the engineering investment sizably over what a small company was able to do with that solution. And I think as you see both this release and the fall release coming up, which we'll talk about more in a couple weeks, you'll see the benefits of the investments that we've made in that solution. And we're very excited about it, just because of the importance of field service. So one of the things as we think about field service is the fact that the bar and expectation is going up. So who here in the last, say, 2 months has had an opportunity to have a field service experience of your own as a consumer? All right. Anybody? Okay. Have you had, whether it be, cable or dish network or, installation or any sort of repair. So how satisfying was the overall experience for those of you who had that? Okay. That would be it looks like a thumb down if I'm seeing that. Yeah. So. Thumb down. Okay. Yeah, so. All right. So there's a lot of work to do in this space to really delight customers. And, as we all get busier, respecting time is important, making sure you get it right the first time, making sure the visits are effective and people have, there's good communication around it. All of those things are really key. And so that's one of the reasons why this is exciting to have this solution as part of CRM, is the ability to delight customers and help meet their expectations. And so I'll show you some of the features that will help with that. So the things that we're going to talk through today are these following areas. So we're going to look at scheduling and dispatch. We'll look at the mobility story, which is key, service agreements. We'll look at inventory management and then connected field service or things IoT related. So that's kind of our agenda for the day. So that's what we're going to go through. So we'll go through a series of demos with a little bit of commentary around that. And then at the end, we'll allow time for questions, if that makes sense. Okay. All right. The first demo we will take a look at are the scheduling and dispatch functionalities. All right. Now everybody knows my pin. Hope you took good notes. All right. Okay, so here's the core, kind of the main screen or the main view when you think about field service. This is the, we refer to it as the schedule board. And it's the view by which managers, dispatchers, people who are responsible for getting work done, responsible for managing resources and so forth, have at their disposal to make sure that work's getting done. So just a couple of key parts about this view. There's a lot going on there. We understand that. And this is a very, it's a very in-depth experience for somebody who is quite experienced and understands the dispatch processes. So on the left, we have some filtering functionality so that we can filter out the resources that show up in our views. And it's very easy to create multiple views. And so I happen to have the view for the Washington territory here. That view is up. But it's I could very easily create other views and have different set of resources and different set of work orders and so forth show up in those views. So that's what you see over here on the left is the ability to do some filtering and selecting and turning off and on resources and adjusting. Then you see here, I'm going to adjust this just a little bit here so you can see a little bit more full view. So here we get to see work orders. Now work orders are the unit of work around field service, and so you can see work orders in various stages here. And we're going to drill down into work order in a second. But we get to see work orders in various states. And so this is a work order. That purple one is traveling. And I think this one looks like it's in process. Here's one. This is my favorite status, which is what I'm usually in, is on break. And so I highly recommend that status, at least for myself when I'm making job assignments. And here's one that is just in the schedule status. And so you can see the various work orders in these various states using based on different colors here on the schedule board. And then we have various other details. Like down here, you can see the set of work orders that are not scheduled. And we're going to talk about various ways of scheduling those in a moment. And then we've got a map view here as well. And so it allows the dispatcher to have, I'm going to zoom out just a little bit. You get a little view of the beautiful Puget Sound area here. And we see a number of different things here on the map. We see a number of resources. And so here's the resource, our good friend Norbert. And here's where his location is, the starting location for the day. We see some gray pins here. These are work orders that are not yet scheduled. And so there's quite a bit we can do with this mapping function. So I'm going to highlight this one of the work orders that's on the list here below. And we're just going to go take a look at the work order itself, and then we're going to come back to the scheduling function. All right. Here we go. So here's the work order. So this is the heart of a work unit in field service. Number of interesting things that go along with the work order. The first thing is that we have service accounts and billing account that's associated with the work order. So the billing account tells you who to charge and the information going with that. And then the service count gives a location for the work order. So if for a company that has a lot of locations, then you would have multiple service accounts and you could just layer in whichever service account was relevant. One of the key pieces of building out a work order are incidents. And incidents are a way of basically standardizing work based on past experience so that when you create a work order, you can use this standard set of work to set up that work order. And you can have multiple instances on incidents on a work order. So let's take a look at this, an incident, for example. So an incident allows us to define a number of things. And so first of all, you know, based on experience over time, the estimated duration, and then a number of other things. And so service tasks, in other words, the technician or whoever's assigned this work can then has an idea of the task that they need to perform and the estimated time that's been allocated to do those tasks. There's a set of services, which are the things that actually get accounted for and charged and billed. And so this is a circuit restoration, and there's a certain billing amount that goes with circuit restoration on the price sheet. And then products. A lot of times there are parts and products that are heavily involved in field service. And so for this type of incident, these are the products that are typically needed to accomplish this work so that the you can manage inventory around that based on the set of work orders you have in the queue, as well as for the people planning and the technician and so forth, knowing what products or parts are going to be needed to get the work done. So if we go back to the back to that work order, so based on this incident that has been associated with this work order, you can see then that the work order then has the has inherited basically from the service tasks and products and services that are driven by that incident, and so this really gives you an idea of the heart of the system and the flexibility around setting up a work order with all of its requisite information. Now, as we look at fulfilling a work order, there's some key pieces of information that can be set up here. For example, preferred resources. So if a customer has a preference for a certain technician, and then there's also promised windows, and that can be expressed in date and time. So if you tell the customer that it's between, you know, the old cable example, 8 to 5, right? That's not a great example, but let's pick a better window. How about something that's like 9 to noon? And so you can give a time window, and then the scheduling functions are going to help respect that time window. And so we'll take a look at that as we go along. So let's pop back to our schedule board now that we've kind of seen the heart of what a work order looks like. So we're going back to this this work order here that's been unscheduled. And so there's different ways to schedule that. And so one approach that we can do with this guy is we can just drag and drop onto the schedule board. And so if in some cases the dispatcher has a lot of knowledge of the work of the resources and the work orders and so forth, and so they can just simply drag and drop. They can just schedule by moving things on the schedule board. They can be moved around a little bit if they want to make adjustments. And so forth. And so there's a very manual approach that can be used. And I'm going to go ahead and remove this from the schedule board now. I'm going to put it back in the list. And I'll show you the next level of scheduling functionality. So it hits back on our list here. Yeah. All right, take just a second to get it back to our list. Okay, here we go. So it's back. All right. So then the other thing is I click on that, you see that the map zooms in. So I can get an idea of where it sits on the map, and I have some more information about it. And then you can see a nice little pop-up here that gives me some more details. I'm going to go to Schedule Assistant. There's a number of ways that I can navigate to this, but I'll just do it from the map and this pop-up. I'll go to Schedule Assistant. And what Schedule Assistant does is starts to add the next level of automation and information about scheduling this work order. And so I have a bunch of different parameters that I can change here. I'm going to actually bump up the radius a bit. Let's just say that within 30 miles, I'm looking for somebody with a 2-hour duration. I'm looking for the following skill. I'm looking for electrical. And you can see the territory and the type of resource and so forth. And so I will go ahead and do that. I'm going to just do a quick search. And what that will show me, I'll widen it out here. So this will show me different technicians who have the right skill set and who have available time and within a certain distance, within a 30-mile radius. And so then I can make a very informed decision. I can look in, up here, and I can see that Wilson has some availability. Let's see, like that looks like that's sometime today. 5 miles away, it would only take 13 minutes to get there. That looks like a reasonable approach. And I see some that are further away, but they still have the matching skill set and so forth. But I want to do a little bit more. Let me just go ahead and let's ratchet down the radius a little bit. Let's just go down to, let's say, something random like 9 miles. And I'm going to search those resources. And now you can see within a closer radius, if I don't want technicians to travel so far and if I want them there sooner, then I can find just a single resource. I can see Wilson here. He can do it either later today or first thing tomorrow morning. And then at that point, I could just select that. I could go ahead and schedule that resource, and I'm good to go. And so that is that's some of the functionality that's available with the scheduling assistant. Same thing with the scheduling assistant. I also have a view. I can take a look at where the resource is, where the work order is, and make a pretty informed decision. So that's a kind of a semi-automated way of doing scheduling of resources with work orders. And so that's a reasonable approach. And so you can see here, we have just a few of them scheduled for today. And so there's a lot more scheduling that really needs to be done. And so rather than me taking the time here in our session to schedule all of them, I've got maybe 40 work orders I need to schedule. I'm going to show you a little bit more automated way. So I'm going to kick off what we refer to as the automated routing engine. And I'm going to start this thing now. I'm going to just let it go, start running now. And it's going to run in the background for a few seconds. And what automated routing does is it uses a build around a vehicle routing algorithm, which is a derivative of the traveling salesman problem, a set of algorithms using basically some genetic algorithms to do optimization. And so it will take a set of resources and a set of work orders that are matched in this scope that I define under this demo scope, and it will feed those to the engine. And because of the compute power we need, we actually have built this on Azure. So we're leveraging Azure compute functionality, capability. So you can see I've got some scope here. So you can see that this is scoped to the Washington territory. You can see that I'm going to do things starting 3 hours out is where I want to schedule for the next 5 days. And so that's scope. And then once I give it the set of work orders and resources, then I can give it some constraints and objectives. That's pretty awesome. All right. Okay. I'm gonna jump in another window here. Jump over to the routing engine. Right. There we go. Okay, I'm going to be back in here. All right, and then the other thing are the goals. So once I've given the routing engine a set of things to work on, I then have a set of constraints, like making sure that it matches the right characteristics or skill set. And then I have some priorities that I can give it, some objectives. And so, for example, I may have things that are locked. Like work orders are locked to a certain time frame, but I need to find the right resource. I may have some that are locked to a certain resource, like this is their guy, this is their technician, but he can come anytime over the next couple of days. So there's locking that way. Some of them are locked to both. Some of them are that we've set up are saying, look, this is don't touch this. This is the right resource, the right time frame. So just leave it alone. Understand that it's there, but don't mess with it. I could have it. I can give it an objective of high priority work orders. I could look at things like maximizing work time, minimizing travel time, and so forth. So there's some objectives that can be given to the engine. And so the engine will run based on those objectives. Okay, so this is what should have happened as we pop back here. It's always great when that happens. So you can see here what I've got is I've got a set of work orders now that have been scheduled. And you can see that they started, I gave it an offset, say, starting at 2:30. And so starting at 2:30, it's starting to layer these things in here. And notice that it's, at a certain point, you get work orders that can't start after a certain time because of work hours and so forth of the resource. And so we're going to be able to get a few work orders in today. You can see those that have been loaded in there, and notice that they're in, nice and compact. And then tomorrow, we have a pretty nicely laid out schedule based on the algorithm of the routing engine. And so you can see the work orders that are laid in here pretty nicely. These little bars up here, these little dark bars right up here, indicate the travel time. And so if the engine's doing a good job, you can see that you'll have work orders, layered in nice compactly, and those lines will be shorter because we're trying to do a good job and you know, thinking about effective routes that will still accomplish the other objectives but minimize the travel time. And so you can see what that looks like. And so you can see that we've got a pretty good schedule laid out based on what the routing engine has done for us. So that gives you kind of an idea of the basics of scheduling, the functions of the schedule board, and also the automated routing engine. So the field service solution itself has been released since last spring. It's in full availability, general availability. And the automated routing engine is currently in private preview and will be made available in the fairly near future under general availability. So if you have questions about the routing engine, we do have some early adopter partners and customers who are experimenting with and simulating this, in some cases, with real production data to make sure that we get the right feedback and we have sufficient refinement of the engine. Okay, there's one more thing on the schedule board that might look a little bit strange. Did anybody notice that long gray bar and wonder what that was? Nobody. All right. Well, okay, I'll tell you. Yeah. So that's a resource that has actually been scheduled for a project from the project service automation solution. Some of the work that we did in this last spring release was to help to rationalize the data so that both solutions are working off a single set of, can work off a single set of resources. And those resources can actually be shared. And so in this case, we've got some guy who's, it's a very common scenario for organizations to have both projects and then follow on field service. Like they might have a multi-week or multi-month installation or implementation of equipment or whatever it is. Then that project completes. And then there's a follow-on service contract for the X number of years to do preventative maintenance and do break fix and so forth. And so it's very common for organizations that have that kind of a scenario to be able to leverage their resources. And so in some cases, folks that are very good at the break fix and understand the equipment, it's great to bring them onto the projects to help anticipate things in advance or use their expertise. Same thing, people who installed it sometimes are the right people to go service those. And so if I look on the project service automation side of things, for these resources, I would see that there are, I would see the work orders that are scheduled against the rest of them, and then I see this project that's scheduled against the one resource here, that long gray bar. So that gives you an idea of some of the commonality where we have built in the most recent release, and the direction is that we will have increasing unification of resource management between the two solutions. You can still use them independently, but when you use them together, we'll have more and more unified scheduling functionality. All right, so that concludes the first piece, and for the deck for follow-up later, there's a little bit more drill down on the optimization capability of automated routing engine. And so anyway, there's a little more information there. So that's kind of the first segment of the demos. So next segment has to do with the mobile piece. Okay. So one of the keys for field service solutions is to have a very capable mobile solution. I'll go ahead and let that sink for just a second. So the field service mobile solution is, we ship that in the public stores. It's available cross-platform for iOS, Android, and Windows. And it works with both phone and tablet form factors. So it's a very flexible application. So here we can see, we can drill down just a little bit. So here's a view from a technician. There's a work order that's been scheduled for later today. And you can notice along the way there's a key set of CRM entities as well. So it may be very valuable for the technician to have a view of their accounts and relevant contacts, the listing of work orders that have been assigned to them, and so forth. We're going to come to some of these other entities in a second, but customer assets, warehouse, products, and so forth. So if I take a look at the schedule for the day, I can pop into this work order. And now you can start to see a set of details that go along with this work order. You can see the booking, you can see the status, and this one is scheduled. And when a technician is picks this one up and starts to travel to their next one, they can change the status to traveling, so that now we have a little more information that will change the status on the board, and we'll know what's happening with that work order. I can also, as a technician, see this on a map. So you can see the details of where the work order sits. If I want to, I can leverage the mapping functionality of the device. And so I click on the map, and it's going to just grab the device map here shortly. There we go. Okay, so now you can see that we see that work order on the map. I think it's trying to find a set of directions for this. This is a, I'm using a Washington-based resource, so the dispatch time on this one. Oh, good, I got several routes across the U.S. here, and so I could be there in a mere 42 hours. That's good to know. So that's quite helpful to a technician. So we'll make a good note of that. But yeah, I can see this in a mapping view. And then I also see other associated information. So I get information about the service account, the territory, the location. And then I start to get into some information that helps me as a technician. So I can take a look at the incident type. As you looked at the work order, there's a fan out on this one. I can see the service tasks. Here are the things that I need to accomplish. Now, I'll have 42 hours to read this as I travel to the job, so plenty of time to consume this. Here are the products that I need. Since I'm traveling such a long distance, I probably ought to make sure I have them with me. And other key information. And while I'm on the job, I also have access to various other information. I can take notes. I can also capture videos or photos or whatever I need to capture along the way. And even up until the point where I finish the job, I'm able to capture the customer signature here. It's a very accurate signature that I've captured. So I basically have everything I need as part of my mobile application. So I'll go ahead and clear that. And we'll back up here, discard changes. And so that's what I have for today. And if I look ahead, you can see I can see the jobs that are scheduled for me tomorrow. And I can still go look at those ahead of time and know what it is that I need to do. One of the other functionalities we have with the mobile application is that it will work both offline as well as online. And so as your field technician is going out of cell coverage range or places where they won't have Wi-Fi or so forth, they can have their day set of information cached. They can make updates. The client will store those updates, and then it will do synchronization and reconciling with the server when it can, you know, when it's in a position to attach again and sync up again. And then the other thing was the fact that I have other CRM entities that are available, like account and contacts, and so I can see have relevant information that I need as part of that mobile experience. So, okay, so that gives you a little idea. I've shown you, I was using here my tablet version with Windows, but just to, just to show you, make sure you see another view of it, I've got my trusty iPhone here. And you can see I've got the similar functionality here on my iPhone. So you can see, accounts. And you can see it works with the phone form factor very nicely. Contacts. I can go to my set of work orders. I'm going to change this view just a bit here. Okay, so now I've reduced the view just to my work orders. Again, you can see that same work order we saw on the Windows version. You can see the map, so forth. And, of course, when you go to map here, it's going to use the native function because it's going to use the native iPhone functionality. And I will certainly allow that. If Looks like it wants to give me all kinds of help. And then I go back to my app and do all the things that I need to do, just like you saw in the versions. The versions are all very, very consistent between them. So it gives us an idea of our mobile app functionality. Okay, so this is just a slide that highlights just a little bit about the mobile scenarios that we support. One of the nice feature sets here is that the mobile app is very configurable. So there's a lot of extensibility, a lot of configuration that you can do with the app to help meet the customer's specific needs as they send their technicians out to the field. Okay. All right. So next area is to start to think about the customer relationship. So we just titled this section Service Agreements, and you'll see several pieces of the functionality for customers and how we capture those relationships. Okay, so one thing I wanted to do here is I jump back in. I'm starting just from the sales menu, but I'm going back to the field service menu. This will just give you a slice of the overall functionality. I wanted to do that after we've been partway through. So you can see that we've talked a little bit about work orders and schedule board and the bookings and that go with those. So now we'll jump into this section where we will cover and talk a little bit about agreements. So we'll take a look at an existing agreement. And one thing to notice is that several places through field service we take advantage of and we ship out of the box business process flows. This is one example. And so agreement is an entity that's unique to field service. And so we have a process flow to actually go through a process of crafting the agreement, getting it reviewed and approved and so forth, and then actually activating it. And so that's a out-of-the-box business process that can be used, and of course it can be extended or copied or whatever. Similar to work order, there is a billing account and a service account. You may have, this agreement may just focus on a given service location, or it can be, it can service multiple locations. It will leverage the default pricing or the price list functionality of CRM. So you can see that we've got a price list here. We're using the default price list. There's a lot of flexibility there. You can create various price lists versus on types of customer. You can create a price list unique to a given customer. And then you attach the price list to an agreement. And then going forward, the work that's done will be priced based on that price list. And so the services that I showed you before, as those things are completed, those will drive pricing events or billing events. Same thing with products, as those are consumed, those can also drive billing events as well, based on the price list that's associated. One of the other nice functionalities of agreement is to be able to anticipate work that needs to be done in the future. So, for example, I have a set of booking setups here, and one of these is just monthly maintenance. So it gives me the ability to set up reoccurring work orders based on one or more incidents. And again, this is the same incident type that is used on work order. We simply use this here on the agreements to set up a reoccurring these reoccurring work orders. So I've loaded an incident here, and you've seen the details of what that looks like. And I can give it some reoccurrence. So let's say, for example, that the recurrence pattern is that these are going to occur on the 26th, happens to be today for some reason, 26th day of every month, we're going to do this preventative maintenance action based on the incident type that we've associated. And so then once we have that set up, you can actually see that it's created some of these dates, and there's actual work orders that have been created now based on the fact that we set this reoccurring functionality up in the agreement. So if we go in and look at our list of work orders, some of those will be generated from the recurrence of the agreement. Also, as part of that monthly recurrence, it has picked up from the incident type, so you can see the various tasks that need to be performed, and again, the services and products that go with that monthly reoccurrence. So that's just one. You can set up multiple of these schedules to go with an agreement, but I just happen to have set up one here that's reoccurring. Another one is that I set up is not reoccurring. It's just basically to represent the pricing for on-demand maintenance work. And so I may have different pricing there. If it's maintenance, I may not be charging, or I might have a preferred rate or so forth. And so any work that happens under that schedule basically can have that different pricing, and you can have different incidents and so forth that go under there. The other setup I can do is invoice setups. And so if I have reoccurring invoicing, I can do the same thing like I did with reoccurring maintenance schedules. I can set a reoccurrence pattern for invoicing. If, for example, I want to pick a date like the 17th of the month, and I want to do this monthly as an example, and starting on a given date, and I can do, let's say six occurrences. And if I were to save this, it would get attached to that agreement, and it would trigger monthly invoicing. And I'll just go ahead and leave that page. We won't worry about saving that. So that gives a little bit of a drill down on agreements and their functionality. All right. So occasionally there's interest in getting paid, and I don't know if anyone here is in that kind of a position where that becomes a somewhat of a occasional interest. But we think it's important, and so what we do for field service is we leverage the CRM invoice functionality. And there's a couple different ways in which invoicing can be triggered. I've just shown you the reoccurring invoice setup. And so it can be driven on a recurring basis based on the agreement. And the work that's been completed during that time frame is what will be picked up as an invoice. Another approach is simply you may have an agreement in place, but there may just be a work order that's been scheduled, a set of products and services that go with that work order. When that work order is completed and posted, that's the final action of a work order, then those items get posted and are available to invoice and show up as an invoice. So here's one that was completed on a recent work order. We can just take a look at this guy. And here we're just using leveraging the base functionality of CRM invoicing. And so you can see here we've got the details that go with that. I can look up you can associate the payment detail and so forth. And again, this is just leveraging the product that we used on a work order. You can see this product that was used on a work order. You can see the price per unit. Two of them were consumed, and here's the extended price for those items. And then from there, going forward, it's just leveraging the basic invoice functionality of CRM. Okay. So I wanted to talk about the next item, which is thinking about the customer and the customer relationship. We have a very important entity called customer asset. I'm going to grab one here. And what customer asset represents is... That's the wrong one. Let me grab the right one. There we go. Okay, here we go. So what this allows is to have a lifecycle view of the customer's equipment and other things that we'll end up servicing. So a customer asset can actually start as a product. So it may be something that a customer requests or purchases. Starts as a product, and so there will be some information about it as a product. The field service action or the work order's task is to take this piece of equipment or whatever this product was, install it in the customer location, and then from that, then create a customer asset if the implication is that the company will be servicing that asset over time. So you can take the asset, use a work order to install it, becomes a customer asset, and then from there out, it can also have we can track the history of that. So you can see here on the bottom right, related work orders that go with this asset. You can see the account on the left to which this asset is associated. And so And then you can store various information about that. And it's a great point. A lot of customers and partners will extend this asset, so that depending on what information you want to track about it. But then you've got this kind of rich history of the asset, and it's available for people making work order decisions, dispatch decisions, and particularly the technician in the field, because they can have the history and so forth. And then as work orders are accomplished, the notes and so forth that go with those work orders, again, those things will accrue to the asset. And so you have a kind of this life cycle view of this asset. The other reason that asset is important, and you'll see this in a few minutes, is because it helps to form the basis for IoT devices. And so since we already have this knowledge about the life cycle of this thing, being able to actually have real-time information and tracking information about this asset, whether it's a piece of equipment or whatever it is, coming from the IoT suite, that's going to have its advantages as well. So we're going to take a look at that in just in a few minutes. Okay. So just a quick recap. We've talked a bit about the relationship with the customer, the agreement. We've talked about assets. Assets are also can be a basis to help track warranties, and so you can have warranty-based pricing as part of a default price list, as part of an agreement. You can track assets that are under warranty and what the warranty dates are and so forth. So we give a fairly rich background to model the relationship with the customer, basically. Okay. The next piece is inventory. Okay. So we'll start with warehouses. Warehouses kind of form the basis of inventory. And a warehouse can be basically any logical or physical location where product or parts are stored. So it could be a literal warehouse. It doesn't move. It could be a truck on which, you know, on any given day there's a set of parts that exist there. Some cases it's a customer location. In some service cases you have a set of parts you store on site. When your technician goes there, they just consume those parts. You can actually track and know how many you have in a given location. So let's just take a look at this truck warehouse. So this is a moving warehouse. And you can see we've got the basics of that, and we want to take a look at the inventory. So here's the inventory data, or the parts data available for this truck. You can see we have a bunch of products here. And just if you highlight this very first row here, you see some interesting things. You've got a quantity of, let me lengthen these out just a little bit here. You've got the available, you've got the on hand, you've got on order, and we've got the amount allocated, as well as we could set up a reorder point. So we have 228 of them available now. Based on the work orders that are in the system, we have three of those that are already allocated for work orders. So we take those out. That gives us the total quantity that are available to be used elsewhere. We also have five that are on order through purchase orders. So we get a pretty good idea. Also, we know, you know, as things happen, as parts get destroyed and so forth, there's also the functionality to make inventory transfers and inventory adjustments. So when we bring the truck up to the warehouse and load a bunch of parts in, you can use that to do a transfer between locations. Some cases you have just destroyed or lost parts or whatever, or faulty parts. Those things can just be handled with inventory adjustments. Then on the inbound side of things, we have purchase orders. And so as parts need to be replenished, you can set reorder points or use whatever process you choose, and then set up work orders. The work orders work against a vendor, which is an account of a type supplier or type vendor. And you can then give it a set of products that are on this work order. Here you can see those 10 that are now, we see that we ordered 10. We have five of them received, so there are five more that we're waiting on, and that was the ones you saw in the inventory, the five on order that haven't been received yet. So that gives you purchase order and receiving functionality as well. Of course, from here, once you have inventory running and purchase orders, you can, it's very common for those to be integrated in with an ERP system. And so purchase orders may want to go through the ERP system. And for doing costing and valuing of inventory, you can keep the inventory counts, keep those updated in the ERP system, and that's a nice way of doing the financial accounting for inventory. So we will take a look at those. You've got purchase orders. And then there's sometimes our inbound products, reverse flow back in. And so then we have the RMA process. And you can create an RMA, give credit back to the customer. That can be reflected on an invoice with an RMA. And then we have receipts. So when those things come in, we actually process them so we know we received them and decide what to do to them. With them, then they can either go back into inventory if they were just something that wasn't wanted and they're still functional. If they're something that there were defects, you can actually return those back to the supplier, and we track that motion as well. So that gives a view of the functionality for inventory management. Okay. So just a few highlights here. We have a pretty good way of tracking history. The other thing that's worth noting is that from the mobile perspective, there's also visibility and access to inventory as well. So if you have a technician that needs a certain part, you can give them access to various warehouses, various trucks, so they can go track down a part that they need, as well as knowing what the parts that are required for a job when they get in there and need to find one. You can give them access to that as well. So next section is one of the exciting new areas, connected field service. So at this point, we'll turn it over to Mitch, who's going to take us through a demo on that. Let's see. Okay. Oh, I forgot to tell. I forgot to give just a little context here. So just a little bit behind it, we call it connected field service. And so there's kind of three pieces of it. You've got devices that are smart enough to send information. You've got Azure IoT Hub, then you have the field service solution. And so then when anomalies are detected, there's a bunch of different approaches that can be taken with that anomaly. Mitch is going to take us through those. And you now start to be able to shift the game, going from just regular maintenance to starting to be predictive and anticipate issues based on data we're going to get back from IoT. There you go. And with that, it's all yours.
All righty. Okay, first off, I want to apologize. I didn't know the lights were going to be so strong. So if the people right here will close their eyes, you'll see a reflection of my bald spot in your retina. So sorry about that. So who knows what the Internet of Things is? Mm-hmm. Okay. How many people have heard of the Nest thermostat? I mean, people have a Nest thermostat.
All right.
A few of you? Okay. That is an Internet of Things device. So basically, it communicates to the Internet. You can massage it from your phone. It talks back home. And basically, it's a perfect example of things. They also have everything from light bulbs or things like what we're going to talk about today. There are things like sensors and, industrial type equipment. So one of the things that it's nice to be able to control through CRM is to track any kind of things that are happening with your IoT device. So your device is going to actually make a call into the Azure IoT Hub, send it a message. That message gets translated into an action item inside of Dynamics CRM. Okay? The really cool thing about all the field service stuff is these are all Dynamics CRM entities. So you could have created anything that you are going to see today with just standard customization. So created, the fields, the things like that. We have workflows behind the scenes that you can modify, so we'll be going through several of those scenarios. So this is our dashboard for Connected Field Service. As you can see, we've got a few graphs about how things are laid out, and then at the bottom, we have some actual alerts. So one of the things you do at the beginning is you create a customer asset. Kyle walked through that earlier. So what we're going to do here is I'm going to bring up one that I've created earlier. And again, this could be anything at all. So it could be a sensor, whatever it might be that you have need to connect to Dynamics CRM. So we have the ability to give it a name, and then the device ID is also very important. This is how you're going to refer to that thing. So right now, I just gave it a name. If you don't give it a name, it'll give it the GUID ID of the device automatically whenever it's registered. So as you can see, this one's been registered already. So let me go find another one that's not registered. And then here's the brake one. On the command bar here, you notice there's a register with IoT Suite. So I click on that, and it's going to process it and send it a registration command to the IoT hub. So that's going to happen behind the scenes, and so you can go back to work. You can do these in bulk, or you can do them one at a time, like what we're doing here. One of the cool things about this is we can actually create composite assets. So, you know, you may see a variation of this where they use a wind turbine. So you got a generator, then you have the blades and things like that. Each one of those things can be part of a composite asset. And we can also monitor things individually. We can give things commands to the entire thing or to one thing. Okay? So let's go over to our simulator and see if we have a thing registered there. So basically, this is just a simulator for a thermostat. So a thermostat is going to measure two different things. It's going to measure the temperature and the humidity. So what we're going to do is we're going to pick one. And the default is going to be at 40% humidity and 65 degrees. If we want to modify it a bit, I'm going to just modify it by hand. I'm going to give it a temperature of 75. You can see the status at the bottom of the message sent. So I give it temperature 78. And then what it's going to do is it's actually going to send a message into CRM. We have a workflow that is monitoring these things, and what's going to happen is, depending on the temperature, we're going to take an action here. Take about a minute or so.
Yeah. Probably turn it off now.
Turn it off. Okay. Yeah. Turn that off so basically it doesn't keep sending messages. So at 78 degrees, what we want to do is, you know, there's something could be wrong with it, and this is technology, so what we're going to do, we're actually going to recycle the device remotely. Okay? So this is done automatically. Automatically? Yes. I invented that word. You may use it for 1 cent per. Okay? But what if something goes really, really badly wrong? Let's change it to 88 degrees. So this one is way above normal. So at 88 degrees, we want to take other action. So what do you think would happen if your temperature of, say, your fancy, whatever it was, went to 88 degrees? That's probably a bad thing, right? Because electronics don't, in most cases, like heat, right? Okay? So what we're going to do there is we're actually going to do some other action. So I'm going to go back over to CRM, and I'm going to go back to my dashboard, and I'm going to take a look and see if we've got any messages. So here is our message right here. We've exceeded a temperature of 78 degrees. It's called an anomaly because it is an anomaly, okay? Then I'm gonna see if I have new ones here. There is my 88, okay? So at 88 degrees, we have a really big problem. Part of that really big problem is we have to physically address that problem by creating a work order. So we've automatically created a work order because the temperature threshold that we decided on was exceeded. And if we go back to our monitoring station, we can see that Abraham is going to be on site in the past, which is going to be quite fascinating, between 1 and 3. Okay? And again, almost all of this is done through CRM. You have the Azure components that work with the Event Hub. And then everything else is controlled within CRM. Okay? Make sense? Okay.
All right. Yeah.
Yes, sir. So the question was the rule about whether to send someone on site.
I mean, how does this scale?
Yeah. So what's happening here is that Mitch showed you in the dashboard, we've added a new entity called Service Alert, and that little grid on the bottom left. Those service alerts come in. It's just a first-class CRM entity. In this case, we've just used workflow on that to pick those up and say, okay, given a certain reading, here's the action that you should take. One action is that you can actually generate a command that goes back to the device. And again, this is all completely extensible. CRM doesn't know about what, you know, those actions. It just sees data coming in. Workflow, then you can interpret that data, decide what to do with it, and formulate a command, and it'll just pass that command back. So, yeah.
So, anyway,
take one more question, then we'll wrap up, and then we'll
maybe question. What we're talking about is it's easier to manage things inside of CRM because it's a better environment. Because all this, like Kyle said, it's just giving you a piece of data. It's up to you to interpret what that data actually means.
Yep. Yes. It all just comes in as a CRM asset, and then you can decide what you want to do with it. So you have all the data. You could crank up Power BI. You could apply ML to that, and we have some things we're thinking about in the future. But yeah, you basically have anything you could do with CRM data. You could do with that. Okay, and then we'll take some more questions on that. We've got a few more minutes for questions. But while we wrapped up. Just wanted to give you an idea of some of the roadmap areas we're thinking about. This is a very important solution for us because it's important for our customers. You saw just a little bit about the Connected Field Service. That's something that's in preview now, and we'll be bringing that to general availability in the near future. Another area is, lack of a better term, we call it a resource ecosystem or perhaps Uberization. If we look at the world, the way it's evolving with the way that we staff projects and work orders and so forth, it's long past the days where you've got a set of employees who all work for you and you know how many you have and you dispatch them out. Now there's much more of this ecosystem of resources and opportunities, and we are planning to make investments to further facilitate that. We have ambitions about things that we will do with LinkedIn as well as that acquisition closes and things that we can leverage there. We want to continue to evolve the technician experience and make that experience better and more predictable and more predictive for the technician, and we have some ideas of investments there up into and including leveraging HoloLens for the technician experience. There's a whole bunch of context that we could provide for a technician to have augmented reality as a part of that experience. So that's some of the places we're going there. Leveraging machine learning, for example, when you have incident types, the past practice has been to kind of eyeball it and say, yeah, we think this one takes about this long. But actually leveraging machine learning to help understand those patterns and be better predict the durations. In some cases, it'll take way less time. In some cases, it's a complicated job. And how do we figure out that pattern so we know that it's going to take longer? We have a bunch of work we're doing around mapping. We know, for example, that there are gaps in the Bing map coverage worldwide. And so enabling the use of a third party or your mapping provider of choice to do geocoding and distance calculations, refreshing the mapping experience itself, showing routes on a map, being able to show the route for a technician on the map, things like that. For service agreements, having richer relationships, service level agreements and entitlements and so forth. For resource scheduling optimization, that'll be the new name for what we call automated routing engine. We are wanting to generalize that and also have extensibility. Those are the two highest priorities for us. For RSO, we have a set of functionality. If customers can work within the functionality we have, that's great, but we need to make that the ability extensible. You might have different objectives, different constraints. You might want to take into account inventory or other factors, and so we need to build that in, that extensibility. And then exchange integration. So we're doing this for both project and field. The ability to have bookings that are assigned to me show up on my Exchange calendar. And when we do time entry, for example, in PSA, that's another area where we want to leverage exchange integration to help identify time entries and so forth. So these are some of the roadmap areas that are important for our customers. We hear a lot of feedback on, and so these are the areas that we're going to be focusing on going forward. So with that, we are ready for questions or discussions. All right, yes, and probably we should use the microphones so that it catches it on the recording, if you guys don't mind doing that. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Am I missing something?
Oh, well, just go ahead, I'll repeat it.
So for the mapping parts, do you take into account projected traffic? So like if somebody were to hit during rush hour tomorrow, do you have that as part of the mapping plant route already?
Yeah, the question is, we call it historical traffic patterns. So if I'm going to dispatch somebody at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, it may take them a different amount of time than if they're there at 8, if they're traveling at 8 in the morning. That is a roadmap item for us. That's a really hard problem to solve. But that is something we've heard a lot of feedback that and that makes sense to do. Yeah.
For the connected field service, you showed the simple example of a thermostat. We're an industrial company and have all sorts of machinery, and we're putting sensors, reading vibrations, and all sorts of stuff. Is your model completely extensible into any object type we might want to collect data on?
Yeah, the question is around connected field service. Is the model extensible? It's absolutely yes. The field service solution has really no idea what those assets are. I mean, you can build asset category types. Those are all user definable. You can build the assets. We basically give you a template on the Azure side. We're leveraging Azure IoT and Stream Analytics and so forth. We give you a template there. We leverage IoT Hub to register the device and get the messages in. But from there, it's completely extensible. So there's no limitations there. We give you a template, and then you just go nuts with it.
We've actually seen people with industrial applications use the Power Apps to build a field tool that models each of their devices and with the sensors around it. So their app looks like it, even though the back end isn't specifically aware of what all those things are.
Perfect. Yeah, great answer. All right. Yes.
The
question is, let's say you have high priority work orders that come in during the day. Does the engine have the ability to leverage, or will it have the ability to leverage the real-time location or the last known location of the, and yes, that is part of the mapping extensibility, so that thing can get smarter, knowing that things are, and also, the other area that we want to, that it'll get smarter in the very near future is, we don't assume, right now it assumes the same starting ending point every day. That may not be reality either. And so you can have flexible ending and starting locations. So those are both on the fairly near-term roadmap.
Because I was thinking,
take those into account.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I was also thinking too, if you had a cancellation, for instance,
so
that frees up a service text time.
Yeah. Yep.
And then auto scheduling kicks in. Well, hey, they happen to be close to plug them in for that time slot.
Yeah, that's a good example of it as well. You got a cancellation, you got a site sitting on his thumbs. Let's pull one of tomorrow's in or something like that. Yeah, that's a great idea.
Okay.
So, yep, those are both consistent with the roadmap. Yep.
Hi. My question's around optimizing the schedule.
Okay.
We're working with a client right now who actually wants to manually optimize your schedule based on sales. It's a sales rep scheduling. So for instance, they see that they want to, I mean, their goal is to optimize the schedule every day. So they need to be able to see, okay, so there's three resources during this time slot or two during this time slot. Is that accomplished? And I mean, I haven't looked into it yet. So we're kind of in the middle of this. So this is why I figured I'd.
So are you working with work orders or are you using some other entity?
Work orders.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so the way that the engine works is you can scope it very granularly. And so you say, okay, here's a set of work and here's a set of resources, right? So you can fix the scope on that, set those together, send those into the optimizer. And then what the optimizer will do, it will say, okay, let me look at all the combinations of skill sets and skill requirements, and let me find out who can do which ones. Now, based on the objectives, I want to put those in the right order. And with the goal of it always getting it towards, like, you know, always, at least at this point, the way it functions, it's like, okay, starting with the time I give it, let's start filling it up, using everybody's time, and then just work out to the point where I have free time, right? So I've got everybody's schedule filled up, and then beyond that, I've got free time, and then that might be 2 or 3 days out, or it might be later in the day or whatever. And then if you run it again, it will start adding on to that. And
okay, so is this automatically done through the optimizer, or so what they want, they want a sales manager to optimize these people. They want to leverage the best salespeople.
Well, in that case, if they really just want, you're just leveraging human intelligence, then you wouldn't need their routing engine.
Yes.
Then you have the two approaches. You've got, you can use the schedule board and just move things on the board. Or you can use the schedule assistant and just go one by one and say, okay, let's take this work order. Let me take a look at it. You know, who fits the right, you know, who has the right skill sets, and let me just want to, you know, I want to move those in. And it'll help find the next best slots to slot those in.
Okay.
Yeah. So you have both flexibility around both types. And you can use a combination of each. You could let, for example, you could let the routing engine run once a day, but then you got the guy who really knows what's going on, and you could let him move it around. You go, oh, now let me just, you know, this one actually would fit better here.
And when you talk about the routing engine, that's what's not available today.
It's in private preview.
Okay.
Yep. And so very soon, by the time, you know, people are, you know, the next few months.
That's fine. And this client is very much, they want to step into change opposed to all at once. So
yeah, I would start with the base solution. Let them start, you know, put some of their data in. Let them start playing around with it, doing some simulated scheduling with it, and then, you know, it could get more mature over time.
Okay. And then the next question is with the scheduler and the filtering on it on the left, there's that filtering. Yeah. Can that be modified there?
The type of filtering is currently fixed.
Okay.
But there's quite a bit of flexibility in there because, like, for example, the characteristics, you can model anything you want under the characteristics. It could be skills, it could be preferences. You could model things like on-site, off-site, you know, various things that you want to model in there. One of the feedbacks we get over time is, yeah, I'd like to have a little more flexibility around that, so that is that's something that we're looking at.
Okay. And I'm just curious again, working with somebody, and this is where it all comes up.
Yep.
All those little questions.
Yeah.
So this
I would get them started with what we've got, see what their feedback is.
Okay. Sounds good. Thanks.
Yeah. Awesome. Thanks. Thanks for joining. Yeah.
Hi. Initially, in your slides, you mentioned the mobile payments, but isn't it that it was removed?
That was removed. Is that still on the slides? Is that in there? Did I have that on a slide?
Yeah. Yeah, you did have it, and you mentioned it. That's why I just
That was referring to mobile invoicing. So you can send your technician out and actually trigger the invoice on site.
Okay.
So if they finish up the job, they can actually trigger that. They can give the customer the total, and then the invoice gets sent to them.
But
you know,
still, was there any plan to incorporate mobile payments
for point of sale payments? It's something in consideration for us. Is that a high value scenario that you see to be able to capture payment of it?
We have a few opportunities where, you know, they're asking to be able to collect payments on site.
Yeah, you know, yeah, and the problem got tougher with the new credit card standards and chip and PIN and so forth. And so about the time we did the acquisition, the bar went up in terms of being able to capture payment. So that's something we kind of set aside for now, but that is good feedback. That's important.
Second question was, in terms of the inventory and warehouse management, is there anything like you guys looking to enhance it or leaving it to more you know, partner customers?
Yeah, that one isn't a big roadmap item for us. I'd be interested to know, like, what areas
you have work orders and you have products on those work orders, and you may not necessarily have, let's say, you know, the availability of it.
Right.
And those work orders might exist 2-3 weeks in advance.
Right.
So to be able to look at, the availability of those products and, the having those products on need for those work orders being scheduled out.
Yeah, we do have, I mean, if the work, we do have the relationship between the products and the work orders. And so if you've got, if they are in a work order, then they are, they do show as allocated.
Right, but if what if, you know, it's not available? If it's not available on the truck.
Oh, yeah, okay. Going the other way and saying, okay, there's a work order in 3 days and we don't have any of those parts.
Right, and having something like a suggested.
Right. The data is all there. It's probably more of a reporting problem, is by creating a report that would identify that. We have all the data to do that alerting. That's a good point, though.
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
Okay, yeah, good.
A couple of quick questions. So one follow-up question on GPS tracking. What's the timeline on that? You mentioned it's coming. It's in your roadmap, right?
Which, when you say GPS tracking,
I mean, we should be able to track the field agent. We should be able to track where they're at so that if one work order is canceled. What you said is kind of on the same lines, but it's not exactly GPS tracking. So
yeah, okay, there's a couple things. One thing I didn't mention that I think I'm okay to talk about now. So one thing you can actually, with the mobile app, you can actually turn on what's called auditing on the map and real-time tracking. And so what happens is you, if you turn on real-time tracking, the records that come that are coming back in from the updates that are coming back in from the mobile device, those have a location stamp on those, and so you can turn that on the schedule assistant and so forth and do real time, so that the schedule assistant knows where they're at now based on the last record that got stamped with the location, so that gives you a pretty good idea of where they're at during the day, and that's available now.
That's when they update the status on the work.
Yeah, like if they go to traveling or last time they, like if they, you know, entered completed anyway, last time you saw a record from them, we have the location from that. You can turn on that mode and the schedule assistant understands that.
Okay.
Thing that we're going to do, we're working on, it's a little bit different than your question, is we're about ready to make available in preview Glimpse integration. So the Field One guys have been experimenting with this in the past, and what that does is it allows, you know, it's an add-on functionality. Customers can decide to opt in and have a relationship with Glimpse. And then in that case, you turn that on, and that allows, particularly, it can be used for the dispatcher, but particularly for the customer, you can actually, you know, when they go to status traveling, it turns on Glimpse tracking so they know exactly where they're at, know their ETA to the next location. You can make that available to your customer. Awesome. And then Glimpse has a web experience. You can point to the web experience. They can see the ETA. They can see where's my tech and so forth. So we're about ready to make that available in private preview. So it's a little bit different than the question you're asking, but that's another geo function that's coming very soon.
Okay.
And it's a real customer pleaser. You know, that customers really like that.
Second question is on the optimization algorithm that you talked about. Is that part of CRM or is it like part of Azure machine learning? Which algorithm does that and which algorithm did you guys opt to implement and why?
Okay. The guys who worked on this, they went back to some kind of, they were several algorithms that they explored. They settled on one that was a fairly popular vehicle routing algorithm, had genetic functions in there to do genetic mutations and so forth. And so just so you know where this sits. So the compute part of that actually runs in Azure. We leverage Azure Compute for that. The data, you know, originates and is managed in CRM. So when you install that solution, there's an add-on to CRM, well, on top of Field Service, that enables you to turn it on. So you can turn on, decide which resources, how do you hook it up to Azure, that kind of thing. And then there's an Azure piece that gets deployed as well. So that's it's a value-add add-on. So you pay, you know, you pay more for that. And when if you opt into that, then you download and install the CRM side of it. Then the Azure side gets deployed back behind the scenes. And then when you start running it, it sends the data off to Azure, and then Azure, you know, this algorithm that we have running, then run in Azure and then get the results back and we put it back in CRM.
Cool. Last question. So through the mobile app, can I do barcode scanning for
Yeah, so you could go, okay, I consumed this part, or I'm working on this customer asset.
And does it automatically manage the inventory module based on the scan?
Well, what you can do is you can say, you can just mark this part as consumed. Okay, you scan it and go, okay, this part's consumed. Okay. And you go, okay, yep, that got used on that work order. It subtracts from inventory.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Good question.
Follow-up question on connected field service. Yeah. If we have our devices already hooked up to an IoT hub,
yep.
Can we point CRM to our IoT hub, or do we have to use yours?
Yeah. Are you talking an Azure IoT hub?
Yes, an Azure.
It's all bring your own, actually. So we're not deploying that. So you're already set.
Okay.
You already have what you need. And it, over time, it wouldn't be it doesn't need to be limited to Azure IoT hub as well. The interfaces that we use, you could use it with some other hub.
But, okay, so that's
what
all
we like.
You basically go into CRM and configure where you want the data to come from.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
Part of it, there's some scripts that you run, and as you download, there's some scripts that you run, and it sets up some things on the, you install a solution on the CRM side of things, and then you give it your Azure subscription and so forth, say, okay, then hook all this up, and then, it connects up a service bus so CRM knows how to talk to the Azure service hub and vice versa.
Yep.
So,
okay.
Yeah, it sounds like you're in great shape.
Thank you.
Yeah, you could have it running tonight. Three lines of code.
I'm from Amway, and we sell a lot of air purifiers and water purifiers in Asia.
Uh-huh.
So one thing we're looking to improve is the product registration experience.
Oh, cool.
So do you have something in the works or something available right now for that?
When you say registration experience, what do you mean?
Yeah, so being able to scan a barcode on my air purifier I just bought and then...
Yep.
Assist with the registration.
Yeah, that's available now. So, because it's quite a common scenario, because it's a part that comes out of, you got it in inventory, right?
Yep.
And so you grab it out of inventory, you give it to the tech. Tech takes it out there. They install it, and then you want to go. Okay, I need to create a customer asset for it. So it already knows that it's a product. We already know some about it. So then you go convert it to a customer asset from the product. Grab the barcode, grab the number, and so that's all available. Available now.
Do you have something available for the customer side themselves?
The customer themselves. Say more about that.
That would be close to a power app.
Okay.
Probably what that would be.
You mean for the customers to self-register?
Yeah.
That's really not this, honestly.
But it would work. I would see it working
but
with this.
But you could have it to where it would actually create a customer asset.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Okay.
Yeah. Excellent. All right. Good. We've created a customer opportunity in this room. I love it. All right. Good deal. Good answers.
Right. Hi. First of all, thank you for the excellent presentation.
Oh, you're being really kind, but thank you.
My question is around the work orders scheduling. Is there a way, what is the best way to link up? Is there a way to link up work orders? Like if certain things are going to happen in sequence, like somebody goes out for a site inspection, another visit is for really, doing some measurements, third visit is for some real-time work like installation.
Right,
Is there a way to link up the work?
Yeah, you can actually store related work orders. We get to a point where, we have some customers who are trying to do too much with work orders when they really have a project. So there's some cases where you might really need the project service functionality because this really is a 2-week project, right? And so then you put the sequence of tasks in there. But in other cases, you may just create 3 work orders and then sequence them. One of the things that you can do that better manually. One of the things that the routing engine doesn't understand today, it doesn't understand, you can relate work orders, but it doesn't really understand that sequence so that it schedules the same resource to it. So in that case, what you would need to do is you'd have to lock the resource to it. So it's not the best scenario for automated routing, but it can be done with the manual or the schedule assistant scheduling. Because then you could relate the work orders and schedule it, this one on today and this one tomorrow and the next day. So not a perfect solution for the optimizer, but it can you can do it otherwise.
All right, thank you.
So,
another question that I had is around just a moment, I forgot.
Sure.
The question.
Take your time.
The IoT. Uh-huh. So if we have to kind of build a very quick demo or something like that around, like you showed to us, so what's the best way? Like, we have to have a free Azure account and IoT Hub and, you know, capture that information, send messages. So what's the best way to quickly, you know, come up with that kind of a working scenario which we can show and, you know?
Yeah, the best way is to have the solution in script that we make available. It's under it's currently just under private preview. It'll be coming out in preview very shortly. So if you just watch on Connect, you'll see the previews for that. Just fill out the questionnaire, then you'll get the script, and it'll set it up for you. From there, you can go experiment with it.
All right,
it.
Okay, thank
that,
you.
That's the really the quickest way. It's pretty easy. I think you did it, Mitch, right? Did you get it all? You just ran the script and that you got to set up the IoT suite? Did you do that? Or
I didn't do it, but okay. I have it.
Yeah, I've done it recently, and it's easy enough a PM can do it, actually. So.
Okay, all right, thank yeah. you.
Hi. I have a question about your mobile app. Is that
sure.
based upon RESCO?
It is. Okay. Yeah, we leverage the RESCO technology.
Okay. Is there a roadmap to get off of that in the future state?
For now, it's for the foreseeable future. It's our solution, and it's a very capable solution. So it meets a lot of requirements.
Right.
That's why we're there. We're making investments to enable field service functionality on the Mocha client. But if you're familiar with Mocha and you're familiar with what the field service app can do, there's still a bit of a gap there. And so unless and until we have a first-party solution that is fully capable, we'll continue to support that.
Right. I ask, we are doing a pilot at my company right now, and we use MFA. We require MFA authentication.
Uh-huh.
And with a RESCO client we're having, we are unable to utilize MFA.
MFA, yes.
Yep, in our environment. So wanted to ask what that roadmap looked like and what we'd be facing. So.
Yeah, that's a good question. It is a roadmap item to be able to enable MFA. So that's good to know that you have that requirement.
Okay, thank you.
So you're welcome. Yep, that's a good question.
So my question goes back to using the scheduling for sales.
Okay.
Have you or can you use it for both sales and service in the same organization?
Do you use sales and field service?
Yes. Well, do the scheduling for sales and service within the same organization.
You can. You're probably wanting to schedule different objects than work orders, right? Like leads or opportunities?
Well, yeah. It's basically the same scenario that she described.
Yeah.
Salespeople going.
Okay.
Being able to, like, they're going to go to one city and they want to optimize their visit and they want to hit all of the same clients in the same city.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, stay tuned. Keep watching in the next 2 weeks.
Okay.
What I can't tell you anything about dates today, but what I can tell you is that we are actively working on generalizing the resource scheduling functionality to work with any CRM entity. So I actually have some stuff I've been playing with even the last few days. And so that would allow you to say, okay, I have a lead and a work order, and those things those might go to the same person, and I might optimize for location, and the same resource could do those two things.
Okay.
So, I think you'll like what we have in store in the very near future. What's that? focus on... Yeah, pay attention around CRMUG, 11th through the 14th of October. Yeah.
All right.
So,
thank you.
Yeah, and if you're at CRMUG, I'd love to see you there. Come to the session, and I can tell you more. Good. All right, we have one participant in that session so far. That's good to know. So, yes.
I have a question with regards to the ERP integration. You mentioned something about the inventory and about the invoicing.
Yep.
I noticed on the NAV, the Dynamics NAV, there is some part of integration already set up for CRM. How is that with the other parts you just mentioned today?
Yeah. So basically, we leverage the SDK or customers leverage the SDK. So we're not trying to ship an out of the box integration. We do have some samples that we are. That we're making available for Scribe, using Scribe, between CRM and AX. So we're making those things available as kind of samples or examples. But other than that, we would just encourage you to use whatever tools you use for Dynamics, you know, for CRM integration, and then use the entities, use the web services to do ERP integration.
Okay, because yeah. I know there's already some integration on the NAV side set up, but you might not be aware of that.
Oh,
for customers.
Yeah, the former, is this the connector? The
no,
one
connector.
That was,
yeah.
Then
now has been closed for, but it's more on the sales side.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, we don't have any of that for NAV for field or project at this point. We're wanting to give you samples. There's no built-in integration. And one of the challenges with doing that is it's really hard to find the right target, it gets more and more complex, as you get field service agreements and work orders and, the parts and all of that point. It's as we've tried to scope that out, it's increasingly difficult to try and get like an out-of-the-box story for that. So what we're trying to do is give you all the knowledge we can, give you examples and guidance around how to integrate with those entities. What's that?
What's the preferred integration tool that you guys are?
Well, preferred integration tool. We don't really do the integrations. So you guys are more expert. The one that we've experimented with a bunch is, and we'll make some samples available, is Scribe, using that approach, using their templates. So yeah, okay. I think I'm obliged to fast forward to the eval slide. There's a bunch of free IT resources, and there you go. And please do give us an evaluation. Love to know how we're going. If you need any help filling those out, we'll tell you how to hit the high scores on the app. So, all right, thanks very much.